Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. All actions have consequences. That's what we teach young people and try to remind older folk, too. Some of those consequences can be rather startling and very unplanned. Just ask the citizens of 19th century Delhi, India. I'll let our guest, Bettina Kraus, editor of Liberty Magazine, explain. She joins us via Skype. This program is sponsored by Liberty Magazine. Okay, Bettina, you recently wrote an editorial that I believe illustrates the whole concept of unintended consequences perfectly. Please share that story with our listeners and then expand on the topic as it relates to today. The time is yours.
Sure. You know, this is one of my favorite stories, and it is probably not historically accurate. Maybe someone has shaded the truth here, but it is a very colorful story. And it's from 19th century India. And according to this myth, to this tale, British authorities in the city of Delhi saw that there were too many cobras. There were too many deaths by cobra venom. And they wanted to do something. They wanted to eradicate these snakes. And so they came up with this bright idea. They would give a reward, a monetary award, for every snake someone brought in that was dead. And this way they would diminish the population of snakes, of cobras in Delhi. Yeah. Well, and this is what I like. Some people got to thinking and thought, what would be a good way to make some money from this? And they began to breed the cobras. And there was a full-scale cobra breeding program that soon cropped up. And British authorities were paying hand over fist these rewards for the dead cobras until finally they worked out what was going on. So they put an end to the program. And then, of course, the cobra breeders, having nothing to do with the cobras that they had bred, decided to release them. And so the British authorities ended up with a problem that was exponentially worse than the one that they started with. So, you know, I was thinking about this the other day when I was reading a number of articles about vaccine mandates and about the response of some people who are concerned who don't want to take a vaccination for the COVID-19 virus and who are bringing forward various reasons why they should be exempted. I started to think, you know, what are the consequences? What are the potential consequences for the use of religious exemptions for avoiding a vaccine mandate? Now, I know, Charles, on this very podcast, we have talked about vaccine mandates, yes. And I have made the case very, very clearly that there is no reason, no matter what the pressure of public health policy, there's no reason to do away with wholesale the ability of someone to claim a religious exemption from a vaccine mandate for a genuine religious conviction. And there are faiths, Christian Scientists, for instance, who have this long record of rejecting the type of medical interventions that would include vaccines. But here's where it gets tricky. The law of unintended consequences says that everything that we do will have both intended consequences and unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. And what I am seeing as I'm reading reports coming in of this massive explosion in claims for religious exemptions to vaccines is a very dangerous situation for religious freedom, for the integrity of the idea of religious freedom. Because, Charles, quite frankly, what we're seeing in many instances, and I'm not saying in all of them, but in many instances, we're seeing the abuse of the language of religious freedom. Mm. For instance, you know, we know under the 1964 Civil Rights Act, Title VII, employers must reasonably accommodate an employee's religious beliefs. I mean, this is federal law. We're familiar with it. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to an employer trying to administer a religious exemption program in the midst of a pandemic, they're running up against a couple of really difficult realities. And the first one is that under Title VII, the idea of religion, it's not limited to the so-called big three, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. The religion that is accommodated or intended to be accommodated under Title VII also includes, you know, an infinite variety of religious beliefs and also individualized beliefs that aren't part of any sort of generally recognized religious system. So that's one problem. It's a very broad definition of religion. Mm-hmm. The second one is that this religious belief to support a religious exemption claim must be sincerely held. Now, this is where the can of worms gets open, because employers are meant to start with the assumption that an employee's religious belief is sincere. They're not meant to investigate too far into that. And in fact, in many areas of religious accommodation, courts have been traditionally very reluctant to stray into this territory of assessing whether a claimant's claim of religious belief is sincere. Because you think about it, you have a government entity digging into an individual's conscience. Right. It's just not something under our constitution that we really want to go too far down that track.
Absolutely.
So an employer who is now faced with an influx of these religious freedom claims, employees wanting to exempt themselves from the mandates, have to work out how to satisfy these two requirements. And then let's look at it from the perspective of an employee. Let's take a mythical employee named Susan. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to be vaccinated because she believes that the vaccines were rushed into distribution, that she believes that they may not be safe. She believes that the mandate itself is coercive, that she should be able to choose for herself what sort of health care she gets. Mm-hmm. And she also believes maybe there's something to this idea that she shouldn't trust public officials to tell her the truth about COVID and vaccines. Now, this whole package of beliefs that are leading to her vaccine hesitancy, they are her individual understanding. They're important. They should be discussed. But they are not religious freedom issues. They do not entitle Susan to claim a religious exemption under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. And if she goes ahead and couches her claim in these terms, her employer will quite legitimately say, I'm sorry, you're not entitled to a religious exemption for these reasons. And so what does Susan do? She goes to the internet. She goes to any number of websites that have sprung up in the past few months that will coach her on how to express her objections in religious terms. And on some websites that I have seen, she can even pay for a pastor to issue her a letter vouching for her sincerity.
My.
Now, as I've said, religious exemptions to vaccine mandates are legitimate and important. But the abuse of religious freedom language and the abuse of the idea of religious freedom to cover or to cloak objections which are not inherently religious in nature, that is a dangerous game to play. Because, Charles, as you know, as we've talked about before, there is a growing hostility in our society for special treatment for religion.
Yes, yes.
The very existence of religious exemptions in a whole range of legal areas, this is something that many people and many groups are increasingly saying, why? Why should religion be given special treatment? And as society sees the ostensible abuse of religious freedom language to claim exemptions from mandates, this only fuels hostility. It only gives ammunition to those who would want to curtail religious freedom on a whole range of other fronts. And it makes it very difficult for religious freedom advocates such as us to then turn around and argue for the religious liberty rights in other areas, whether that's, you know, defending an employee who wants to keep a Sabbath or defending a church's right to maintain its religious identity in its schools or in its other institutions. And if we have time, Charles, I just want to name one solid example.
Yes, absolutely. We have 3 minutes. Yes, go for it.
Okay. In Congress at the moment, a piece of legislation being considered called the Do No Harm Act, mm-hmm. which is literally aimed at these religious exemption, the so-called special treatment for religion. It would eviscerate what we call the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It would prevent people of faith from coming to courts and asking the courts to weigh their religious claim against the interest of the federal government in implementing a certain law. And it would prevent that sort of weighing process from taking place. It would simply say, no, you don't have the right to go to the courts on this. And as I look at it, and as I look at the public demeanor on this issue and the growing sense of outrage that religious freedom is being used and misused in this way, I see fuel being added to the fire to initiatives such as the so-called Do No Harm Act, which seeks to cut off avenues of appeal for people of faith across the board in areas of religious accommodation. I know this is a very difficult issue, and in no way would I want to belittle individuals or to say that people's concerns shouldn't be addressed. But my one appeal would be this. Remember the integrity of religious freedom. Remember that this is something precious that we must preserve and that it's our duty to protect for successive generations. Let's not fuel this hostility. Let's be restrained in the way we use religious freedom language. Let's adhere to not only the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law.
The spirit of the law. I mean, come on, Bettina. The people who are abusing this religious liberty concept have lost the spirit of the law. It's not there.
Right.
They're just trying to make it happen because they want it to happen.
Right.
That ship has sailed. So how do we deal with those who are just happily going across the ocean on that ship?
All we can do is to try to call to account
yeah.
and to remind people that actions have consequences.
Yeah. Yeah.
They may find themselves with the short-term outcome that they want. They may find themselves exempted from an employee vaccine mandate. And that's fine. But in the long term, they will be contributing to the long-term erosion of both the idea and the protection of religious freedom in our society.
Bettina Krause, editor of Liberty Magazine, has been our guest today. Bettina, thank you so much for your words of wisdom and guidance. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
This program was sponsored by Liberty Magazine. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with editor Bettina Krause, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258. Or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.